Blog Talk Radio.
Ambassador in the house today. We're going to fill in those missing pages for those who don't know who is our Ambassador Rice is. She has made a great contribution to our people development and to all of human development, and we're going to discuss that in a little while. But like always, you know, MPH Radio is the institution that is dedicated to the upliftment of underserved communities. And our agenda for today's program includes Give Me Something to Think About, What is Freedom, MPH Black Minifacts. Then we have discussion on who is Ambassador Rice as relates to one of 34, the Richmond 34, followed by a message from the community from Alice Joyner. And then we have our closing remark from our special guest. So again, I'm the voice of MPH Radio. We'd like to welcome you again to MPH Radio. Thank you for joining us. And the way we get started with our program is to give you something to think about. That's right. We want to give you something to think about as we talk about and define this concept of freedom. Many times we talk about freedom. It's a concept that millions of people have thought about, fought over, and died over. And we are still discussing what is freedom. So we just want to just give y'all something to think about in the concept of what is freedom. as we take a look at Marcus Garvey. And one of the things he defined freedom as is in this quote. He stated, "There can be no peace among men and nations so long as the strong continue to oppress the weak, so long as justice is done to other people, just so long we have cause for war and make a lasting peace an impossibility." What do you think about Brother Marcus Garvey's perspectives on freedom? Let's look at the president, the first president of the Republic of Guinea, the Revolutionary Republic of Guinea, under the leadership of Ahmed Sekou Touré. He stated that, "We have told you bluntly, Mr. President, what the demands of the people are. We have one prime and central need, our dignity. But there is no dignity without freedom. We prefer freedom and poverty to abundance of slavery." What do you think about that? He also went on stating that we prefer poverty and liberty than riches and slavery. Brother Ahmed Sekou Touré responds to his concept of freedom. Let's take a look at one more. That's coming from Frederick Douglass. Well, Frederick Douglass defined freedom in the context of power concedes nothing without a demand. It never did and it never will. Those who profess to favor freedom and yet depreciate agitation are men who want crops without plowing up the ground. What do you think about that? So we hopefully we are giving you something to think about as it relates to this concept of freedom. And what we're going to do right now, we're going to take a break. We're going to play some music with a message. And when we come back, we want everybody to get out their pen and paper. And we're going to share with you some black mini facts coming up back, Susie. So right now, we're going to take our break with music with a message. And we'll be right back. And you'll listen to MPH Radio.
Thank you.
That's right. Learning to love yourself, love your people, and love humanity is the greatest love of them all. Welcome back to MPH Radio. Right now, we're going to make our transition to MPH Black Mini Facts. We will now bring in Susie so she can share with you some important history as relates to the history of African people. Right now, Susie, we'd like to welcome you to MPH Radio. Welcome.
Good evening. Today, July the 31st, 2021, I'll be doing the mini facts for the 25th through the 31st of July. The first one was, it's Emmett Till, 14-year-old African, brutally tortured and murdered in Mississippi, born in 1941. On the 26th, Cuban forces led by Castro attacked Moncada Barracks in 1953. The 27th, A. Ashburn patent process of refining coal oil in 1880. And also for the 27th, a mini fact we have on this, on the day of the 27th, 62-year-old co-founder of MPH Radio was born and continued to be a beacon of light for freedom, justice, and equality for African people and a just humanity. Happy Earth Day to Brother Lee. And on the 28th, the first European imperialist war began in 1914. And last and least, the mini black fact is Joseph Cadet kills captain and takes over slave ship Armistead in 1839. Ron Delmas, member of the U.S. House of Representatives, died in 2018. They have just given you the mini facts for July 31st, 2021.
All right. Thank you, Susan, for your MPH Black mini facts. And what we're going to do right now, before we go into our special guest, we take another quick break, a quick break with music with a message. When we come back, we're going to entertain that theme today. One of 34, the Rich from 34 and Bassman Rice. We have a special guest coming on when we return. This is MPH Radio.
Save the nation. We're no support for education. Cause right now it don't make sense. Right now it don't make sense. Let's talk about our part. My heart touch your heart. Let's talk about living. Had enough of dying. That's what we all about. Let's do more giving. Do more forgiving. Yeah. Our souls were brought together so that we could love each other. Sister, we are here. We are here for all of us. We are here for all of us. That's why we are here. Why we are here. We are here. We are here for all of us. We are here for all of us. That's why we are here. Why we are here.
That's right, MPH Radio, we are here. We are here for all underserved communities. We are a vehicle for the voice of the voiceless. We want to make our contribution to our people, humanity, and the best way to do that is to fill in those missing pages of history. At this point in time, we're going to continue to move down the road of freedom as we continue filling those missing pages by introducing you to a very significant young lady, a very significant freedom fighter, warrior, a very significant woman who understood that life was bigger than just herself. And right now, what we're going to do as it relates to the theme 1 of 34, the Richmond 34, and Ambassador Rice, we'd like to say welcome and say hello to our special guest today, Ambassador Elizabeth J. Rice. We welcome you to Missing Pages of History Radio, MPH Radio. Welcome, Ambassador Rice.
Thank you so much, Mr. Robinson Lee. I know you feel like I've known you for many years. I'm just so happy to be on this global radio station, and I feel very grateful to be here today and to be a part of the Missing Pages of History. And I have something to share with those missing pages. I am a member of the Richmond 34. It has happened in February 22nd, 1960. I'm going to take you back there. Now, we know what happened in February 1st in 1960 because that's the one you always hear about, the Greensboro Four. You don't see our names anywhere in writing, but they will be. But we also were very significant, and I want to bring that up. In February 22nd, George Washington's birthday, there were over 200 students, all of us, at the Virginia Union University in Richmond, Virginia, on that campus. There were over 200 of us getting ready to go to class. I had just left my home. I lived on Northside, and I walked to school from Griffin Avenue to Lombardi and met with students on the campus. I told my parents, who were very prominent citizens in Richmond, my father was a dentist, Dr. Ford T. Johnson Sr., and my mother was a professor. She soon became Dr. Elizabeth Johnson. And anyhow, they had told me they knew about what was happening in the South and for me not to really get involved because they didn't want me to get hurt. They'd seen the vicious pictures on television about how the dogs had bloodied up people and the police with their bully clubs and what have you. And they didn't want me to be a part of that, but they knew it was coming to Virginia at some point. They just knew it because Richmond was the seat of the Confederacy. We had all the statues all around us. We knew it for many, many years. But anyhow, that day, I came up on the campus of Virginia Union, and the students were not in class. They weren't going to class. For some reason, they were kind of mulling around the grounds, and I looked on the ground, and there I saw the picket signs. Well, where were the picket signs? Where'd they come from? Well, Martin Luther King and many of the preachers of that day used to come to Virginia Union and just, you know, camaraderie speak, and big conventions were held. And I had the opportunity to introduce Martin Luther King at some of those speeches and rallies, not knowing who this man was, Ralph Abernathy, that James Farmer. Didn't know who they were. I'm just a 19-year-old student who's finishing up her college education. At any rate, he had taught us about nonviolence, and if you're going to get involved in the march, we want you to be nonviolent, because he'd learned that from Mahatma Gandhi. And so we knew that if we were going to march or pick up a picket sign, we had better follow those rules. And so we came on the campus. I had every intention of going to class, but I kind of got caught up in the moment of really doing something. I just could not ignore what was happening. Something was happening in history. I didn't really know it, but the spirit knew it. And so I picked up a sign alongside my brother, who was always, he was there also. He was a student at Virginia Union, 2 years younger than I, and he picked up a sign. And before we knew it, we got the call from the leader, the person by the name of Reverend Frank Pinkston and Reverend Charles Sherrod. They were ministers at the school. And they said, we're going to get in line. And today, they had already gone down to test the rules that week before. And they had shut down Woolworth County and some of the other counters. But they wanted to make an impact on what was happening in Virginia. And they said, today, we're going to one of the Mecca stores in Virginia, Tallheimer's Department Store, one of the beautiful stores that could be equated to a Macy's. And so we're going to go there today, and we're going to picket around Tallheimer's, and we're going to make a statement. Well, that's what we did. So over 200 of us left the campus quietly, observing the rules, and made our way to Tallheimer's Department Store, and we picketed around the store. Now, anytime you want to stop me, Lee, stop me, because I can get going on this. So I'm going to go until you stop.
I want you, Elizabeth, Sister Rice, I want you to tell the whole story. We have plenty of time. This is your day to fill in that history, which is very important. So take your time and tell the story, and I know you're going to tell it right. So continue to speak.
Yeah, I want you to put yourselves there with me. That's why I am so enthusiastic about it. And I want to tell it like I've never told it before. And so here we are picketing around the store. People are blowing their horns. The buses are making noise. People are yelling from the bus all these racial slurs at us. But we don't care. We're marching. We're doing this nonviolently, standing up for freedom. Why are we standing up for freedom at Tallheimer's? Well, it was the Mecca of shopping. People could go there, and they would come there to see Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny and all these things. They were known for the bakery and all these things. So we decided that was the place to go. And so you could go into Tallheimer's and purchase things. You could purchase a hat or a dress or a pair of shoes, but you could not try them on. And because if you tried them on, you had to buy it. You couldn't go home and return it. That was the policy. That really wasn't fair, because white people could take the dress or get the shoes and return them. And so, and don't even think about sitting down at the lunchroom counter. That was for whites only. Well, they took our money in other parts of the store, but they wouldn't take the money there. And also in the upper room, the green room, I think it was called, the Richmond room, was a nice, elegant restaurant above the escalators. So that's why I'm telling you, they had escalators and elevators in that store. So it really was a beautiful store. And the people that worked there were very fine people, and a lot of the blacks that worked there liked the owner, Mr. William Tallheimer, because he was very fair to them. He was the type of person that they called him Uncle Bill, Uncle Billy. So anyhow, that's the kind of situation it was on. So anyhow, we're picketing around Tallheimer's, and all of a sudden, we hear the leader say, "We're going in." I said, "Oh, no. What have I done? I have already disobeyed my parents. I picketed around the store, and now they're going in?" And so it just so happened that I happened to be at the area of the entrance, and 33 others, and we went into Tallheimer's and took seats around the lunchroom counter. Some went to the upper room. And here we are taking our seats, so wondering, what are you doing here? We don't serve blacks. We said nothing. We didn't say anything to them. We didn't say anything to each other. It was a telepathic experience, believe me. But we knew what we had to do. We had to represent our school, our families, our race, what we were doing. And so we were there. I happened to be on that near the window, and I don't know where my brother went, but he was somewhere in there. And all the other students there were on that first level. Pretty soon we looked out of the window, maybe about 40 minutes or 50 minutes into it, and we saw the police wagons pulling up. And this is what I had dreaded, what I'd seen on television. I said, I hope nothing violent happens here, because we knew it could, and other things that happened, other things were going on in Richmond, but we didn't want this to happen here. So anyhow, they get out of there, they get out of the wagons, and they have the German Shepherd dogs on those chains, and they're coming into Tallheimer's to be violent against. We didn't know. We had no idea of knowing. We just knew we had to continue to maintain being nonviolent. They come into the stores with the dogs. The dogs are coming close to my leg, and I said, please don't let this dog bite me. And they pulled the dog back. The police did not call us any names. They did not hit us with the billy clubs. They did tell us, students, when they said students, we knew that they knew we were students. Students, you're going to be under arrest if you don't leave right now because you are trespassing. And so I said, how are we trespassing? You know, we're sitting down. We'd like to get something to eat, but you won't serve us. And so that went on for a little bit. And then I guess about 10 minutes later, I think the police had also gone to the upper room to get whatever students had gone there. And the next thing we knew is that, all right, we're gonna remove you from here, and you're going to jail. So I said, okay, I can't believe I'm going to go to jail. My perfect record all these years, haven't gotten into trouble for anything. And so I was waiting for them to push us off the stools or to hit us with the club. They pulled us off of the stools. And we were kind of all surprised at this treatment. Because in other states, people were really getting beaten up. Why? Why were we treated this way? And I know that's a question you want to answer. If you have answered later, but we will. Anyhow, they pull us off, and they take us to the police wagons and slam that door, and we're hauled off to jail. So we get on there, get there to jail. Nobody's still speaking. We were really disciplined and knew what to do. They opened up the door of the police wagons and let us out into this little side door into this police station. And so we get in, and you know what the drill was. We had to be fingerprinted and had our picture taken. I don't remember my picture being taken or being fingerprinted, but I have the picture to prove that I was. And also the 33 others were. And we were thrown into jail. And that metal door clicked. We knew we were there. We didn't know how long we'd be there. We didn't know who would be coming to take, who paid for 34 of us to get out, whether we'd spend the night or whatever. However, in about less than an hour, the bailiff comes in and says to us, "You students are free to go." Your bail has been paid. And I couldn't believe this. We're free to go? Well, who paid the bail? What happened? What is going on here? So we are let out of the steel doors, and we line up like we're supposed to do, and we're led out of that same door we came in. But this time it was different. We were lined up, and we heard a lot of noise outside. And what it was people were lining both sides of the sidewalk. And I couldn't see anybody, but I could hear them. When I got to the front of the door, I peeped around the corner of the door, and there were mainly black people on both sides of the street, and they were clapping and singing and putting their hands up. And I said, what is going on? And then I caught the eye of some other men across the street, and I realized how they were looking at me, and I met their eyes, and it was like they were saying thank you because you students, did what we wanted to do, but we couldn't do it because we would have lost our jobs. We probably would have been beaten, but you made a statement today, not just for yourselves, but you did it for us. And when I realized that this was a spiritual thing, not just a physical thing, and then I realized, boy, thank you for giving me the ability to do something good for somebody else. And when we got out, we realized that the wagons weren't there anymore. But there were automobiles, cars lined up, and we didn't know who they were, but we knew if we didn't let out, they had to be for us. So we got into these different cars, and these cars took us to Eggleston Hotel, one of the few hotels for blacks in Richmond, because you couldn't stay overnight at a Holiday Inn. That was a part of the Jim Crow law. You couldn't do that. And so we were taken to Eggleston Hotel, where we met with strangers and faculty from the school and other students, and just everybody was there. I was concerned about the parents because I knew some of the parents had heard that Virginia Union students had been arrested, and now they're out of jail. What's going on? So we get into Eggleston, into the big room there, and I'm surveying the room to see who's there. And I look to see my mother, and she had a smile on her face. And mind you, she was a professor there in Union. But yet she's here at this hotel. And then I looked around to see if my father, who was pretty stern in his appearance with his three-piece suit, and he had his hands behind his back, and he was looking not angry and not smiling either, kind of a pride he had in his face. And I kind of felt like he was really super proud because not only did his daughter get arrested, his son got arrested. And from there, we went back to the campus, and many things transpired. They were happy. The people were happy to see us. They did stay on campus, and it was really big news. And so that's phase one of that experience, Lee. I'm going to go on to tell you what happened that night. I got a call from the president. Unless you want to say something, just pop in any kind of
thing. Yeah, I want to stop you for a second. I'm just curious in terms of, you said with 200 students that went down, why only 34 went in? Was just a reflection of how many seats they could serve at a time, or
right.
It was just 34 students out of 200 who were willing to make that commitment?
Yeah, 200 couldn't get into the store. That was just too many. But the 34 took all the seats on that first level and up at the upper room. So it was like, okay, I think we've got enough people on the inside. But had 200 gone in, it would have probably been chaos because they wouldn't have been able to sit anywhere, and they just thought it was best.
Okay. You can continue.
Okay. All right. So that night I got a call from the president of the school, Dr. Samuel Proctor. Some of you may know that name. And he, of course, knew my mother, and he knew that I was very active on campus. And so he said, put me on, put, they, she put me on the line, and I talked to him. He said, look, pack your bag because you're going to New York tomorrow. You're going to catch a plane, and you have been invited to be on the Today Show. I said, what? So he said, you're going to be a female from the South in the sit-in, and you're going to be on the show with a young man from the South, from A&T, and you all are going to be on that show. So I was here, something else happening so fast, so I packed my bags, and there I was on the plane that morning, and we were met at the airport by, believe it or not, the staff at that time. The leader of the show was Dave Garraway, who some of you might know, and also Florence Henderson. And they were the host and hostess of the show. Well, we got there, and they were very cordial and very happy to see us. But the other guests, we found out that we were going to be in a debate with five segregationists from the South. I say it like I always mean it. Five old white men who did not like blacks at that time at all, never did, and they were going to debate with us. They want to ask us a question that we had to answer, or several questions. So we didn't know how that was going to go. So they set it up, and here we are on national television. I know it's in the archive there somewhere at the station, but no one can seem to find it. And the question was, why do you young people think you should be first-class citizens? What makes you think you deserve to be a first-class citizen? Well, you know, they looked down their nose in terms of whether we should have citizenship. They did not look at us human beings. We were less than. And so I don't remember everything that I said, but I said, because I am just as much human as you are. I deserve citizenship just like you do. Why not? And I don't remember all that was said, but I do know an intermission occurred soon after that, and Dave Garraway warned them if they did anything out of line, he would embarrass them on national television and kick them off of his show. And so I was always very favored Dave Garraway for his kindness and looking out for us. Well, that was part of that show. Then the same day we had something else planned for us. We were invited to go to lunch, and we didn't know who the lunch was with or where it was. We went to a really nice restaurant, and the people that had lunch with us, believe it or not, Roy Wilkins, if you know that name, director of the NAACP, back then one of the leaders, and Thurgood Marshall. I did not know who these gentlemen were, but there they are having lunch with us and talking about how proud they were of us and what have you. I also appear on one of the NAACP's, the back of one of their books, showing that I was a civil rights activist female there. So that's there somewhere in their archives, or many of the old books that were in the 1960s. And so that was wonderful to be able to find out later who these gentlemen were and the impact that they had on society. And after that, went to the New York Times and had an interview. And then that night, back to Richmond, Virginia. So that was quite a whirlwind. Came back to the campus, and they were very happy that I conducted myself as they wanted me to do. And got a lot of emails from that, and a lot of proposals, what have you. But so that's what happened. That happened in 1960, February 22nd. And then, of course, I graduated in 1961, okay? I graduated in 1961 and, got married, moved to D.C., and here's something you need to ask me, mostly. From 1960, after it happened, until 2004, I was teaching in Washington, D.C., and no one had ever said the word sit in. What happened to Tall Hammers? Never called us back. I don't know what happened. It's like it went under the carpet. And I got nudged, a spiritual nudge, to re-commemorate what happened, to commemorate, do another commemoration march to let people know what happened in 1960, because it did happen. And so February 2004, I had a march that I started. I got help from a Dr. Hilton, and I got help from the mayor with a proclamation, and I got civil rights leaders in the city at that time to come. And we started from Virginia Union's campus, and students were not there, or those that were there did not know about us. They didn't know who we were. And so here we go. And I, at that time, I marched as best I could in these three inch heels. Couldn't do it today, though. But at any rate, we get there, and there's not that many of us, and we're walking and we're singing. We shall overcome, a few of us, my family members. And we get in front of Tallheimer's. It's still there, but it's getting ready to be torn down. And I guess that was why I decided to do that march then. And so we had speeches from different people. But at the end of all of the speeches, there weren't that many whites in the crowd. There were a few. But there was this one couple that came up to me after we were speaking, and I was leading this whole thing. And they said, Ms. Rice, I'm so proud of what you've done and that you've commemorated this. And I know you haven't been acknowledged like you should have. None of the 34 that got arrested or the 200 that left the campus have been acknowledged. But I'd like to do my part to help you when you have your 50th anniversary. And that, 2010, to make it something really big that everybody will be involved in. And she said, my name is, listen to this, Elizabeth Tallheimer Smart. I'm the granddaughter of the man that arrested you. And it was, I said, I can't, thank you so much. And I said, I made certificates myself for all these civic organizations and the leaders. I said, you know what? Spirit made me do one for William Tallheimer. And I have a certificate for your grandfather. He was still living at the time. And she said, what? Why would you do a certificate for him? I said, because he caused us to make a change in the city of Richmond, Virginia. And many things changed because of what we did and what he enabled us to do. And he, from what I found out, well, I may say that later for one of your questions. But at any rate, Elizabeth, her name is Elizabeth Tallheimer Smart. We became good friends. We're still good friends to this day. She calls herself Little E, and I'm Big E because I'm Elizabeth also. And she kept true to her word from that day, 2004, until 2010. We worked behind the scenes, getting merchants together, getting people that would come into the city together, writing lesson plans for student workshops, all in print. And we had Sheila Johnson with their basketball team, and she came to represent and led workshops. And it just was people were bussed in from different counties. The merchants had an awesome luncheon for, I don't know how much it was a plate, but from 100 up a plate. And the city and the college embraced us. And during that meeting, people were saying, well, what are you going to call? I mean, what are you going to call these 34 students that got arrested? And so there was a debate between calling them the VUU 34, and that would be strictly still for Virginia Union, which would have been great. But the body, all the people working behind the scenes said, well, Richmond has embraced you guys. We put money up. We've done this for you. So you really need to, just like the Greensboro 4, you need to call yourselves the Richmond 34. And so that's how the name Richmond 34 came about. But at any rate, we did have that. We had an awesome weekend. We invited the Richmond 34 that could come back to Richmond, all expenses paid, put them up at the Marriott Hotel, which would take blacks at that time, and it was, the Jim Crow laws had lifted, and treated them to wonderful, buffet eating. And that evening, The last evening we had a concert, musical concert of one of the civil rights legends who was also a singer, none other than John Legend. And so we had him back in 2002. And so that's what happened in 2010. We had a 50th anniversary, and we've been having a little anniversaries every since. And this might be a good time to kind of stop and let you ask me some questions before I go further.
You know, Ambassador Rice, I would just like to get your response to the lack of attention, the lack of recognition, why it took so long from 1960 to 2004, given the fact that you were students at a University of Virginia Union, and you look at the significant role that Virginia Union has played, particularly towards the historical development, economic and political development of Richmond in particular. Many people who look at the alumni as it came on Union, a lot of them came to hold prominent positions in the,
right.
the political arena. So I'm just real curious in terms of, we take great pride in understanding knowing that history. History must be not only known among us, but the world as a whole. Why do you think we just see a large gap between y'all contribution on that time and before y'all got recognition 2004?
I kind of think, babe, that because, you know, there was still a lot of Jim Crow stuff going on at the scenes in terms of economics and that type of stuff, and they didn't want to rock the boat, you know, in terms of funding. I can't tell you the reason why it was never brought up, why we were never mentioned. Students who have gone to Virginia Union since 1960 up into 2004 are incensed when they realize that you need to tell me that they did this and we know nothing about it. So, you know, I'm very grateful to have been able to bring it from out, you know, to bring light on the subject because it was so important, and to still bring light on the subject because I don't care what museum you go to in any state, you still don't hear about the Richmond 34. And so it was the first mass civil rights arrest. There were 34 arrested for sitting in a lunchroom counter. And I dare say we have that statistic on record, that no one else had that many arrested at that time. But the thing is, we're doing our part now, and I've been doing this as long as I can remember, as long as, you know, we have to have the strength to do it. And we'll continue to do so. So we had a historical marker that was done in 2016. That's on Broad Street, right where Tall Harmonies used to be, and it has the names of the 34. We have a granite marker there where Center Stage, now called Dominion Electric, I think that's the new name of it. That's there. We have a granite memorial stone there on the Virginia Union campus that, you know, is where things happened. We did have, when we had the 50th anniversary, that was there, and we came around that. But in terms of, and I'm going to probably speed it up a little bit, in terms of really big recognition, we didn't really have that until just recently. But everybody since 2004 has been in acknowledging it. And our current president, Dr. Lucas, is doing what he can. I understand something's underway, but I don't know what it is. They won't tell me. But at any rate, that's what happened in 2004. And then, of course, 2016, the marker. And we've been we had a big celebration that Dr. Lucas helped us arrange in 2019, and I'm going to tell you why that happened. A.J. Franklin, who was one of the Richmond 34, was on his way out of town. He was Dr. A.J. Franklin from Boston College, one of my colleagues. He was on his way out of the country, and Homeland Security at that time stopped him and said, Dr. Franklin, you better take care of something that's on the books. if you plan to go to Ireland, I think he was going. He said, what do you mean I have something on the books? He said, well, your name is here. You have something outstanding. He said, what do you mean? I've done nothing wrong. Very indignant. They said, well, is your name A.J. Franklin? And did you go to Virginia Union in 1960? He said, yes. He said, did you get arrested? He said, yes, I did. He said, well, that's why your name's on the book. He said, well, we went to court on that. The case was dismissed. All of that's gone. He said, well, your case may have been dismissed, sir, but it was never expunged. And he was shocked. He called me on the phone, and of course, we knew each other that well. He said, Betty, do you realize I am still wanted on the book? Which means if I'm wanted, all of the Richmond 34 are wanted. We still have records. And so I said, what do you mean we have records? I've had some wonderful jobs since that time. So, well, regardless, your record is, you still got a record out there. So we found out, we got it. Called the NAACP and Judge Jameson, who worked with us and got the records. We had to go before the General Assembly and went back to court. So the 59th anniversary was one to celebrate the fact that we had those that could make it, could come, had their records expunged. So that was a big day. So that was the day that we became officially free. Some of us still don't have our records expunged because of travel or couldn't get there. But at least that was done. That was done in 2019. And so that's where we are now. We are still having our anniversaries and doing what we can and trying to keep the word out and letting people know that we do exist. And the thing that changed everything in terms of a big acknowledgement was in 2020 when COVID hit. And, you know, we really couldn't see each other and everybody's masked up and what have you. And so during that time, the baseball season was kind of slow too. Nobody could come to games. So believe it or not, to tell you how God's hand works, you just don't know. I happened to get a call from the Flying Squirrels minor league baseball team here in Richmond. And they said, we've heard a lot about you. You kind of brought back the information about the Richmond 34, and you've been trying to keep it alive. And we'd like to meet with you, and could we come and talk to you? And so we're going to come and pick you up, if it's okay, and bring you to the Diamond. And so I checked with my family members, and they wanted to know, who are these people coming to pick you up? So yeah, I cleared all of that, and I went to the Diamond with them. And when they came to pick me up, it was Parney Purnell, who is the manager of the Flying Squirrels baseball team. And Nutsy the squirrel, which is the mascot. So you can imagine what the people at my apartment complex, my wonderful fence community, they wonder, who are these people going to Miss Rice's apartment? And so anyhow, they found out. And then, anyhow, I got into their van, and we went to the Diamond. And Parney said, look, Elizabeth, I want you to tell my players here and the people on staff, tell them your story. So I had to tell my story that you've heard. And so many of them, I really was emotional about it, and I said, this is what happened. And he said, well, I'm going to tell you why you're here, because we've been trying to make a decision on what we're going to do. This is COVID time, and we're trying to do something, because before they were the Richmond Braves, and they had this big Native American statue on top of the Diamond. And they removed it, you know, from all of the information about being respectful to Native Americans. So there's nothing there. We need to put something there. They said, and we've been debating on what to put there. And after hearing your story and hearing you tell it, what we want to do is to have a legacy of the Richmond 34. Let them know that there is a legacy. And we want people, as they ride into Richmond, as they look up at the Diamond, they will see Richmond 34 Legacy. Not only are we going to do that, we are going to retire the number 34, that no player will ever wear that number. And because it's just like they retired Jackie Robinson's 42, we're going to retire 34. And we're going to have a big celebration to launch this in March. And we want you, not only that, but we want you to be a representative of us. We want you to be the ambassador. And I just added a goodwill to it. But we want you to be there and to speak at that time that we do all of this. And then we'll have Legacy Weekend in July, the 16th and 17th. So we just came out of Legacy Weekend, and it was awesome. 9,000 fans now know about the Richmond 34. We were on the Jumbotron and everything about the history. Brian Bullock and Bundy Films, he's been trying to raise money for that film, and hopefully PBS will be able to air that soon. But I'm representing a lot. But not only that, what really got me so excited is not only are they doing this for the Richmond 34, they have expanded my platform to talk about, and they want to end racism. And I said, where in the United States is a baseball team working with a black woman who's now ambassador to eradicate racism? What an opportunity to talk to other people. And so that is where I am now. We've gone into the schools to launch the program. Nutsy has gone into the schools, elementary, middle schools, to talk to students about eradicating racism. And wherever I can do that, just like on this program, what an opportunity to talk about, because racism is rampant around the world, even right now in the United States. And so that's where we are with the Richmond 34. I didn't want to leave there, Lee, until I talked about my brother, his case, because it's kind of related. He was one of the Richmond 34. And he had a case that was...
Ambassador, before we do that, I'm going to tell you, let's hold that for a second. We're going to take a station break with music, with a message, and we'll come back. We're going to entertain that, as well as we're going to open up our phone lines. For those who have questions or comments for Ambassador Rice, we encourage you to call 818-337-0016. I hit 1. Please hit 1, and we will acknowledge your last 4 number. Any questions or comments? So we're going to a break with music, with a purpose. When we come back, Ambassador, we'll pick up about the contribution that your brother has made and its impact it may have had or has had on Richmond, Virginia, and the rest of the world. We'll be right back. This is MPH Radio.
If you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher? Who told you you love your black preacher? Do you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? People must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation,
would make a better society. Now some of us would rather cuss and make a fuss than to bring about a little trust. But we shall overcome, I believe, someday, if you'll only listen to what I have to say.
And how long have you held your white teacher?
Who told you you love your black preacher?
Can you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? I say now people must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation,
we'll make a better society. And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right?
That's right. If you had a choice of color, which one would you choose? And if there was no day or night, which one would you prefer to be right? You're welcome back to MPH Radio. We're speaking with Ambassador Elizabeth J. Wright. She was one of the 34 of the Richmond 34. She's telling history that took place back in 1960 as a sit-in at Tall Hammer's department store in Richmond, Virginia. It's a history that very few people have known about it. And one of the things we want to do at MPH Radio and Mr. Page's History as an organization is to restore our history, write our history, protect our history, but more importantly, make sure our history is known not only to our community but to the world. So we are very happy to have Ambassador Wright with us today as she tells her story on the history of the Richmond 34 and her contribution. So right now what we're going to do is we're going to bring in my co-host today, Brother Alex Joyner. We're going to open up the mic to him. He may have some questions and comments for Ambassador Wright. And also we'd like to hear from you. You can call in at 818-337-0016. You have any questions or comments as it relates to the history of the Richmond 34 with Ambassador Wright, please do so, and we will hit one, and we will acknowledge your last four numbers. So right now, I'd like to bring in my co-host, Alex Joyner. Welcome, Alex, to MPH. You have heard the story and the history so far of the Richmond 34 with Ambassador Wright. What are some of your thoughts or comments or questions you'd like to raise with Ambassador Wright today? Alex, welcome.
Well, first of all, I would like to say happy birthday, Mr. Lee, and thank you for all you have done. And today, instead of me giving you a gift or a present, you've given me one. And I thank you for that. Because it's always
thank
been
you.
My passion to follow the one that believe in equality for the people of color. So I thank you, Mr. Robinson. And I let you make a wish, but I want to blow out the gap. So now as I address Ms. Elizabeth Rice, I am honored today to listen to all the wonderful, wonderful, entertaining thoughts that you have given me, reminding me of the reason I took my own son to the commemoration march of Dr. Martin Luther King's 1963 march. I've been to many marches, marched in Richmond and many other cities, Baltimore, Washington, I mean, just all over. But regardless where I marched, there was a passion in my step. There was faith in my heart. There was the belief and knowledge that what I was doing was right, and that the other side that taunted me was wrong. So I began to speak out, speak up, speak about civil rights. things that should be that weren't. I began to write about things that weren't in history books because I wanted to seek the knowledge of what was going on. But you returned me back to a day of me also being in an integrated library. And I happened to be over in a certain section of the library that not a lot of African-Americans were in. And that's the finance section of the library. Not a lot of us were in the finance section of a library. But I was trying to figure out what was causing the problem with the wealth gap between the people of color and the people of privilege. So as I was sitting there going over different books and learning about the stock market and trading and bonds and interest rates and the credit system and different things, I was asked almost the identical question you were about being that second-class citizen. What made me think that I had the knowledge, ever have the amount of money, or would ever be anything that would amount to a first-class citizen in America? So I want to ask you, I know how I felt that day when I was there. And I know the response that I gave, and a lot of people wouldn't want to hear what I had to say. But I want to know how you felt as a young college student being on national TV to be asked a question of such importance. And I turn the mic over to you. And thank you, Ms. Ray.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Joyner. And congratulations on what you've done, and kudos to you. And happy birthday, Lee Robinson. When that question came up, it infuriated me, but I couldn't show, like you say, I couldn't show the anger, the nerve of him. It's like, how dare you say this to me? And with all the hate in his face and all of them, the others that were with him were agreeing with it. In other words, you don't have a right to be even here with me. And I said it as kind as I could, trying to look out for my family and the school and others that were watching. So I carried myself with dignity. That word dignity comes up. I was not going to embarrass anyone, especially myself. But I let him know that we, as far as I'm concerned, we are on an equal plane here. You have you should have no more rights than I have.
Thank
you. And they didn't say too much more after that.
Oh my goodness, I'm sure. But thank you so much. And the only other point I'd like to make, too, is about Tall Hammers. Like you said, it was a very important institution. And they were in many cities over the South. And like other cities, they did have that policy of not returning things from African Americans, not being able to sit at the lunch counters, and having to wait in line behind someone else until they finished their purchases and everything. So there was so much shame and shopping, and you were carrying the same amount of cash. You paid the exact same for the item, but yet and still you weren't treated with the dignity of customer service. So
yes.
I appreciate what you did that day. I appreciate what all of you did, all 200 plus did that day. Because like you said, it was a day not just to honor that 34, but the others that stood by and knew that they had even attempted what you did, that they would suffer the consequence. So I thank you again for what you did. And I appreciate
thank
it ever so much. And that's all, Mr. Lee.
Okay, thank you, Alice. Ambassador Rice, we're going to take some callers right now. We're going to take the callers. Your last four numbers are 4298. 4298. Any comments or questions for Ambassador Rice? Caller 4298.
Thank you, Brother Lee, and happy birthday. I think it's great that people had the presence of mind and the consciousness to see the contradictions and the relationships between the friends and the enemies, and were able to take a courageous stand and speak truth to power at a moment in history when we really, as a people, needed people speaking truth to power and standing up and sitting down. And so I think, I would only have words of encouragement. I think, it's a job well done, and I only have words of encouragement. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carl. To go to our next caller, see if they have any questions or comments. Carla, we can go to you. Your last four numbers are 8405. Carla, 8405. Are there any comments or questions you'd like to make to Ambassador Rice? Yes, Carla.
Yes, I do. My name is Sandra Taylor. And happy birthday, Lee. And Ambassador Rice, thank you so much for your contributions. At present, I'm working with a group. The name of it is RAW, and it is a strategic arm of Coming to the Table. And we look at how the construct of race and racism have been intentionally woven into the fabric of American society in general, and Richmond in particular. I am very interested in what you're doing or about to do with young children. And I imagine you're working in the elementary schools. I'm not sure whether I heard that that's the starting point. Has curriculum been developed? I'm looking to find out how I might get involved and assist you in your effort, and how you may assist us in ours. My foundation is also looking offshore, because you of course know that the missing piece in all of this is the unity of us Black folk, wherever we find ourselves to be. And so this is a global African initiative. And to that end, I have managed to put together over 3,000 participants in Ghana, West Africa. We just completed the building of a clinic there. I have constituents in South Africa, and I'm developing Kenya. So, and I'm around your age. I was at Virginia Union and did the first march in 1962. We did the sit-ins at the White Tower. And, the interesting piece was I never knew who organized those things. I always got the call from another student on campus, but I never saw who was, the puppeteer behind the strings, pulling the puppets and opening the curtains. So my question is there curriculum developed for elementary schools, and how might I get involved? How might I participate? Is there an interest with your group of 34, or how many are actively participating now, to look at some of the offshore initiatives? And what kind of help and support do you need going forward? And again, thank you for all that you have done.
Well, thank you for what you're doing. And certainly my email, if you want to take it, believe you're going to give that later, or should I give that to her now?
You can give out now. That's good. Give out the information.
Liz Rice, 1940, at hotmail.com. Lizrice, 1940, at hotmail.com. And the curriculum was developed during that time that Elizabeth Tallheimer Smart and I and others worked for those years from 2004 to 2010. We developed a curriculum for schools that could teach the information about civil rights movement and the Richmond 34. And so I will check with the availability of that for you and get that to you if I can. And you can, you know, and just so proud of what you've done in Ghana. My brother was a teacher in Ghana in the Peace Corps. And he was the one I was trying to tell a little bit about, but I want to respect what Lee says, and because his story needs to be told. So many people don't know it at all. But I hope I get your name and number so we can communicate.
And that would be Sandra Taylor. And the quickest way, I guess, would be to give you a phone number. That's 804-433-6109. The email is easy too. It's globalafrica2020@yahoo.com. And I really have to thank Lee for continuing to bring interesting conversation through these radio broadcasts.
What was that last part of your email? globalafrica2020@yahoo. Yahoo, okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You are very welcome. And don't forget to tell us about why you thought the arrest went so peacefully at the counters where you sat in Tallheimer's.
I will.
Well,
okay, well,
we can do that right now. Why don't you just address that question now, Ambassador?
Yeah.
And thank you, Sister Taylor, for calling and being a participant on today's program.
Yes,
thank you.
All right.
Yeah. After many years of working with Elizabeth Tallheimer Smart and finding so many people that I, when I talk about William Tallheimer, they have nothing but kind things to say about this man. And then talking with her, we have discovered that he was not only, he was a quiet supporter of African Americans in Richmond that a lot of people don't know about. He always wanted you to better yourself. And I think that was why he has such a kind demeanor. And I also have just found out being at the Legacy Weekend at the Diamond, talking to another member of the Richmond 34, Sam Shaw, that some of the money, many of the money that came to get us out of jail came from strangers and people that, you know, just put the money together. Sororities and the vice president of the school mortgaged his house. But I also found out that William Tallheimer didn't want anybody to know. Now, we don't know whether this is factual, but this Sam Shaw says it was. He helped in getting some of those students out. So we'll have to check into about the accuracy of it. But he swears by it. He's one of the Richmond 34. So, I mean, he was trying to get that too, get those students out too.
Okay, Ambassador Rice, we're going to take a question or comment from caller 4600. Caller 4600, your question or comment, please.
Hey, this is Pianki coming from the Midwest and the Deep South. Now, I really appreciate the story that she told and the experiences that you had. You know, you probably had some donation from A.G. Gaskin out of Alabama because he would perform in that capacity too. I think Gaskin must have spent over a couple hundred thousand dollars of his own money bailing people, protesters, out of jail during that period of time. But I appreciate what you do and what you've done. And I want to make this one point. You know, racism isn't really about skin color. Racism is the act that is performed. And being able to intermingle with many people in different societies, that's what it comes to see, because you can see the same act that we speak of here in the United States that go on someplace else. And everybody's skin color may be yellow or it may be red. And I think that there is a missing component. Here in the United States, blacks have experienced, others have experienced things too, similar. I tell you, the Congressional Black Caucus is racist because they have a standing order that no white congressperson who represents and was elected by a black community, a black constituent, can't be a member. Now, that's racism. So
yeah.
I think we need to look at it from that way. The previous lady that called us in Ghana, I'm also doing things in Ghana. My wife is from the Volta region. She's an Akamu. She's Awe from the Akamu society. Now I see, and I talk to all my architects telling them about this, is that you see where you got concerns that's associated with the NBA and the NFL is trying to make inroads into Africa, being led by Barack Obama. And I tell them to stay away from that, because if you look at the history of his association and others, for instance, in the northern region of Nigeria, when they refused to provide that military with intelligence in order for them to fight off Boko Haram and other terrorists, that was actually created by the actions that went on in Libya, telling companies and countries not to provide them, like Brazil, not to provide them with what they could have used in order to recover the young ladies that was kidnapped in Chinook in the northern area of Nigeria. So we see these things going on. People don't understand what they're looking at. Then they will become prey and be victims of the continuation that's been going on and on. But no, I really appreciate what you've done, and I really, well, it was an interesting story. I mean, here you are on national TV, and I can imagine how you failed. You went from being just a student, all of a sudden now you're on the national scene. What a story that is. It is a very marvelous story. So thank you for the opportunity. Thank you for what you've done. And think about that on the topic of racism. It has evolved, and it's about the act that people experience and people portray onto other people. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Carl. Next. Any response, Ambassador Rice, to anything you have heard so far?
Yeah, I'm just so thankful the people that are on this call. I'm just so thankful for the varied experiences that you've gone through. And your last call, I know you talked about Gaskins, but I didn't get the name. The last person you spoke.
I didn't get the name as well, but we can reach out maybe later on to him and find it for you.
Okay. But I also wanted him to know that in March, right before we had the launching with the Flying Squirrels baseball team, somehow CNN got word of things, and Joe Johns from CNN came down and interviewed me, and I was on his show talking about Jim Crow and voter suppression. So right then I had an opportunity to deal with the whole racism issue. So that really challenges me, because there's more to it. You know, the Richmond 34 gave me a solid foundation, but there's so much more going on right now. You know, I mean, believe it or not, today, can you believe Lyndon Baines Johnson, who did, he's the 1965 Voting Rights Act, his youngest daughter was speaking this morning about her father and what he did. She's there at the Poor People's March with Reverend Barber and Beto O'Rourke. They're out there talking about voter registration and suppression and all the stuff. And she is saying her father would not have stood to this, and that she's out there supporting Reverend Barber, regardless of the color. Like you said, color, sometimes you got to get beyond the color and find out what the essence of the person is, what's really truly in their heart. If you have love for humanity, then it's not going to matter what color they are. Just wanted to say that.
Okay, let's try one more question before we go on our station break. We're going to try to see if, Carla, your last four numbers are 0595. 0595, any questions or comments for Ambassador Rice? 0595. Okay, I guess Carla 0595 has no comments or questions. What we're going to do right now, we're going to take a station break with music with a message. And when we come back, Ambassador, we want you to talk a little bit about your brother who was involved in a case, I believe, called Johnson versus State of Virginia. We're going to talk about that and the significance of the case when we come back. You're listening to MPH Radio. We'll be right back. Don't you go nowhere. Spread the word. This is MPH Radio.
Suicide, too many bills, hippies moving to the hills. People all over the world are
That's right. This war is a bottle of confusion, particularly when you don't know your history, you don't know your roots, you don't know what to hold on to. And we're going to try to change that phenomena by filling our missing pages in history, and this is one of the things we're doing today. We are with Ambassador Rice, who is telling her story, the Richmond 34, MPH Radio,
created
so that you can tell your story. So if you have a story to be told, we will welcome it by emailing us at mphradio@yahoo.com. mphradio@yahoo.com. So right now we're going back to Ambassador Rice. And when we left off, Ambassador, you were going to tell us about the contributing history of your brother as it relates to this particular case that very few people probably don't know about, which is Johnson versus State of Virginia. Talk to us about your brother and the case.
All right. The case is 4T Johnson Jr. versus the State of Richmond that occurred in April 1963. My brother was driving my father's car in Richmond, Virginia, with the tags. He had the tags in the back seat, but had not put them on. And he was pulled over by the police and told about the improper tags and that he would have to go to court. So they took him to court that same day. And so when he goes into the courthouse, and he did not, he'd already been arrested in the sit-in. So he goes into the courthouse, and he sits in a place where there are plenty of seats, looking out of a window and waiting for his name to be called. Well, he'd been there just a few minutes when the judge yelled at him from across the court and said, "Colored boy, you're sitting in the white section. Get up from your seat and come over here in the section where the Negroes are. You need to sit over here. That's where they sit. This is a segregated court." And he looked at him, "Are you talking to me, sir?" And he said, "Yes, I'm talking to you. Get over here." Very demeaning. And my brother very calmly got up, moved from where he was, where there were plenty of seats, and came over and stood in front of the judge. And he said to the judge, "There are plenty of seats over there. Why are you demanding that I come over here?" He said, "You don't need to be talking to me that way. I'm the judge. And if you say anything else, if you don't sit down, I'm going to find you in contempt of court." And so my brother didn't say anything, but he stood in front of the judge's bench, refused to move, with his hands folded in front of him. Well, the judge couldn't tolerate this from this black young boy he called sitting standing in front of him. So he said, "If you don't do what I've asked you, I'm going to throw you into jail for contempt." And he didn't move. Well, he threw him into jail. He said, throw him into jail. So they took my brother. The jail was right behind the court, from where the judge was holding the, hearing cases. So my brother's thrown into jail. He goes to the second clink. And it was visible to people coming back and forth, because lawyers would be coming in the court, down toward the jail, out of the court. It just so happened. That's what I call divine providence. It just so happened, as he was there in jail wondering what in the world, why am I here? He knew why he was there. This lawyer comes by and says, "Ford Jr., what are you doing in jail?" And he said, "They threw me in here for contempt because I refused to sit on the black side of the seat when there's plenty of seats in the white section." He said, "You are here for refusing to obey the judge in means of seating?" He said, "Yes." Well, guess who that lawyer was? That lawyer was none other than the first governor of Virginia, Doug Wilder, who was a friend of the family. And he said, "Let me call. I'm going to call your father right now and try to get you released. So just, stay tight." So he didn't see him anymore. Doug Wilder got on the phone, told my father, he said, "Doc, your son is in jail for contempt of court. He refused to obey the judge, threw him in the jail." He said, "I think we may have a case here." And my father said, "What do you mean?" He said, "This is something that the NAACP needs to be involved in, and we need to file this court petition and get it going right away. And between Oliver Hill and so many of the lawyers there in Richmond who were actively working with the NAACP, they got the case, got it together, submitted it to the courts, and Ford was released, of course, that day. Ford Jr. was released that day. But the case went all the way to the Supreme Court. In the meantime, my brother goes to Ghana and is in the Peace Corps and is working. And after he finishes that, one of the days in the Peace Corps, while he's working with his students in Ghana, the Associated Press is coming through the bush, and they're looking for Mr. Johnson. Where's Mr. Johnson? And they said he's up there with the students. And so they get up to the top, and they say, Mr. Johnson, you have won your case. He said, you mean the case for the sit-ins? He said, no, Johnson versus the state of Virginia, the court. The Supreme Court has said that no one should discriminate or should discriminate any further in any court in the United States of America. When you walk into a court today, anywhere, you should be able to sit where you want. There is no segregated seating because of that case. Well, Ford went on to Harvard Law School, and his freshman year, there was a case brought before the class, and there's not too many of him in the class. And so the professor is saying, today we're going to discuss Johnson versus the state of Virginia. And he proceeded to tell talk about the case, and Ford could not take it any longer because the professor didn't have all his facts right. He said, Professor, that's not correct. And he said, why do you keep interrupting me, sir? He said, because I know what's going on here. He said, well, how do you know? And here are the famous lines. Because, sir, I am the plaintiff, Johnson, in this case. Well, his classmates were elated by him saying that. They applauded, and, of course, Ford sat down. But what a wonderful way to let a teacher know, hey, I'm the one they're talking about in this case. And so because of that, I just want, you know, nobody knows this case. Nobody has ever said to him, thank you. No one has given him a certificate. He's never been acknowledged except when I acknowledge him whenever I talk. So that's a part of history that needs to be known, Lee. So I wanted to bring that out.
And will you share with your brother? We'd like to reach out to him, invite him to come on this program so we can do all that we can, not only to share his case and learn from his experiences, but we would like to help him, you, and others to make sure these kind of histories are written in our history books, and not only history books, but these books will be available for our children to learn. That's one of the most important battles that we must fight, is the battle of rewriting, reanalyzing our history from our perspectives. This is why MPH came to existence. This is why we are calling for all of our intellectuals, writers, those who can market, to come forward and help us build this institution. We need your help, need your support. And we're not talking about our history within the confines of the U.S., but we're talking about throughout the world. But of course,
I will let him know to get in touch with you. I will certainly let him know. And I want to thank a friend of mine, Melvin Wester Smith, who gave me your name, Lee. And I was waiting for you to give me a call, so thank you so much.
You know, the brother Melvin Smith is another one that people don't know who has done a lot for our people, and we're going to have him on the show one day. There are so many people who have made contributions to our people's development. We must find a way to make sure our people know these people, learn these people, and they can be examples for future generations. So, yes, I do thank Mel because he did tell me about you, and apologize for not getting back in touch with you earlier, but we did make that connection. So we're going to move forward. We're going to keep traveling down the road with this liberation. But what I would like for you to do real quickly, if you could, there's a book called The Richmond 34 and the Civil Rights Movement. It's written by Dr. Kimberly A. Matthews and Dr. Raymond Cree Hilton. Can you talk a little bit about that book, and maybe how can people purchase their book to find out more about their history?
Certainly. Dr. Hilton's a good friend of mine. He's the one that I talked to when I did the commemoration march And Kimberly's been working with him and written some other books herself. But, yeah, that's the one about the Richmond 34. And anybody who's interested can give me a call, and I can let Dr. Hilton and Dr. Matthews know about it, and they can tell you the way to get it. I think it's not through Amazon. I'm not sure, though. But, yeah, I'm, you know, certainly glad to do that. And if anyone would like a autographed copy of a little book written about me, Sit In and Stand Out, it's on Amazon. Or if you want me to autograph a copy for you, just let me know. It's called Sit In and Stand Out.
And Ambassador Rice, I will make a statement. I would like to just get your response and your observation based upon your history in the movement and struggle. You know, that history, you know, a lot of people have taken a position that when you look at the history of African people in this country, whether it's from the beginning time to the most recent civil rights movement, et cetera, they would tell you that our people have always been struggling for equality and justice, not integration. Many people will argue today that we made a mistake by being co-op and going down this road with integration and not necessarily really push for this question of equality and justice. What would be your response to that statement or that analysis?
Well, equality is one thing, and I've learned that you can have let's just say that there are two sides that are equal in terms of what they're given, but the word equity I think is real important. Equity means you're given so much more. You're giving access to, you're giving more information, more resources to do the best job you can. So you may have an equal classroom, one on one side that looks the same as the other, but the equity, what's happening in those classrooms? So equity is so involved. You've got to realize you want the whole nine yards. You don't want just a little bit of this equality. If you're going to be fair, if equality is going to mean something, then it has to be thorough throughout. So, you know, they can play with that word just like separate but equal. Yeah, we had separate schools, but they weren't equal, and they still aren't. They still aren't. We're still suffering from that same thing. That's why you want, if you've got a school that has all the technical apparatus to do the best things, I mean, that's where you want your children to go. And you don't want them to go that to a school that does not have this. So I think,
you know,
I think the equity thing, to realize that's different.
Concept in Nevada, Brown versus DeBoer, ran his question, separate versus being equal. What would be your position on the issue? Can it be or could it be separate and equal? Or does separation automatically create inequality? Where are you at on that argument or that perspective?
In other words, can it be right now?
I'm saying that in the context of quantitatively, when African people began to integrate, one of the phenomena that came from this integration is instead of having more institutions, we had less institutions. Instead of having more access to resource and money, we have less. So this question of integration is a real interesting phenomenon when you look at this question as relates to this whole question of moving forward, have access to power and wealth, and have access, as you stated earlier, even to this issue of equity. So where are you on this issue is, would it have been any better if we could have been, or can we be separate as long as we are equal? Is that a bad school of thought?
Well, it depends on who's at the top. And you made a statement, you know, you've got to have the same resources that everybody else has. You can, with the climate that we have right now, we have always gotten the short end of the stick. But I think, I don't know when it'll happen or how it'll happen, but it's got to be total equality for, you know, people are fighting for total equality, not just partial equality, the whole thing. As it is right now, unless people will give you one thing, smile in your face that you got it, and then be working in the back rooms to dismantle what you've already been given. There's so much deception in this equality. So you've got to be aware of everything. I mean, you've got people out here just thinking about, I realize that, we all know Cori Bush, the lady who slept outside the Capitol last night to make a point about homelessness, because she's been there. And she's supposed to be an equal member of Congress, and look at how they're treating her. Look at how they're treating so many people. Look at our society right now. Where is the equality? We need some people to stand up and have enough courage, get out of the comfort zone, and be a little courageous. And if I had, I'm looking at Bishop Barber walking and having physical challenges, but he's still in the game. There's still games we can be in. We don't need to count ourselves out. We all can add to this. We've got to stand up. We've got to stop being complicit with doing nothing and not even speaking out. Speak out. Be there. Be in the game. I don't know whether that answers the question or not.
And Ambassador Rice, before we go on our break, I will ask you this question, being a product of a African institution, Virginia Union University. There's a school of thought that we no longer need independent African schools, since everything now is open where you can go where you want to. Where are you on the position? Is there a need, still a need for African institutions, or i.e. universities and schools?
Well, I tell you, I do know this, that I don't feel sorry that I went to two schools. I went to Virginia Union University and had a great education there. And the fellowship and the understanding got me going in terms of the understanding about civil rights and what it means. Having also gone to get my Master's of Arts and Teaching degree from Virginia State University. So I've been exposed on two occasions, but I do remember my father saying years ago that he said he was one of those believers that, boy, we had so much going for us and we were learning so much and people were respected so much when we had our own schools and all of that. But I feel like if you've seen the movie Trading Places, it's one of my favorites, where Eddie Murphy is a guy out there on the streets, and then he's mentored by these other people, and Aykroyd takes him under his wing. He learns about the stock market and everything, and he makes all the money and does everything. It's a matter of who you're mentored by and who's in your corner who knows the answer. So you got to have somebody working with you at these big colleges, or else you will get lost. You get lost in the shuffle because they'll see color and they won't see the person. So that's something to say about letting your voice be heard. And, we all have something to give. We all have a passion. We all have a dream. But if we never speak out about it and we just stay in the background and no one knows who we are, stay in the comfort zone, we'll sometimes get overlooked. So if you're in that big problem, that big arena, don't get lost. Let your voice be heard. But if you're in the smaller arena and you realize, okay, this is too small for me, I need a bigger arena, then go there, go for it. But believe in yourself. If you don't believe in yourself, then you're lost anyway. So that's
okay.
My take on it.
At this point in time, you listen to MPH Radio. We're going to take a break with music, with a message. And when we come back, we're going to have a special message to the community from Ali Joyner. And then we're going to close out with our theme today, one of 34, the Richmond 34 Ambassador Rice. She will give us her final thoughts and words on the subject today. This is MPH Radio.
Sitting in the morning sun, I'll be sitting when the evening comes, watching the ships roll in, and then I watch them roll away again. Yeah, I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh, I'm just sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. I left my home in Georgia, headed for the Frisco Bay. I've had nothing to live for, and look like nothing's gonna come my way. So I'm just gonna sit on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. Everything still remains the same. I can't do what 10 people tell me to do, so I guess I'll remain the same. Sitting here resting my bones, and this loneliness won't leave me alone. It's 2,000 miles I roam just to make this dock my home. Now I'm just gonna sit at the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh, sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time.
We'd like to welcome back to the MPH Radio. Our theme today is 1 to 34, Richmond 34 and Ambassador Rice. We'd like to welcome back to the MPH Radio. Our theme is 1 to 34, to Richmond 34 and Ambassador Rice. Before we get our final thoughts on this theme today, we would like to bring to you a special message from the community. And this message will be brought to you by Alex Joyner. We will now bring him in. Brother Alex, welcome back to MPH. What is your message today for our community?
Well, today, I want to thank everyone for listening in from all over the nation and the world. I'd like to thank our special guest speaker, Mrs. Elizabeth, and if I may say, Johnson Rice, and the callers who gave valuable information. So I thank that the staff of MPH Radio, Susie, as always, wonderful job. Brother Robinson, for all those diligent efforts to bring this missing history to the public today. Past few weeks, I've been reading and watching social media attacks on civil rights and the rise of the privileged individual who believe that America should be segregated again. Segregated school, health care, voting district, financial institutions, the prison system, and neighborhood. The credit system was implemented to lock in the good rate for billionaires and privileged individuals who wanted the law cure their way of rites of passage before the so-called minority run over the country and the government. An all-out war against the people of color is quietly being fought in state legislatures to bring back discrimination and to suppress their rights to vote. The question of the quality of the voter instead of the quantity is being misrepresented. The first voters were white, wealthy landowners who made all the decisions for the middle class, the poor, the indigenous natives, and the slaves of this country. They made decisions to benefit and profit from others who lacked the education to understand the laws being passed against them. The capitalist society of the United States was in high gear until the stock collapse caused the nation to realize the need to rebuild itself for the common man and woman. The voting rights for women and the education of the poor to provide labor for the Industrial Revolution meant America had to do more for the poor. President Roosevelt's New Deal policy helped many Americans. Congress began to put the brakes on so many good things better for the poor and the disenfranchised. We were moving up the ladder too quickly for many. They fought back, as they do today, against progress, equality, and justice for all. That brings me to the content of one's character. Many people all over the world know of the man called the Dreamer. A simple speech urged on by an inspiring crowd of more than 250,000 on a hot day during the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom, in which Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. spoke out about civil and economic rights and the end to racism in the United States of America. Dr. King began his speech with a reference to the Emancipation Proclamation, which declared millions of slaves free in 1863, in which he stated, 100 years later, the Negro is still not free. And near the end of his prepared script, he improvised, due to Mahalia Jackson's cry, "Tell them about the dream, Martin." These few words have become the most remembered and the most famous as he joined Jefferson and Lincoln in the ranks of men who shaped America's conscience on the rights of equality for all as promised by the Constitution. The speech has also been described as having a claim to be the greatest in the English language of all time. Dr. King was given 7 minutes to speak, and he made the most of them. His most treasured words of the speech that day were, "I have a dream that my 4 little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character." Spoken by the Honorable Dr. King almost 60 years ago. Precious one of America's bedrock facts. Its language almost sounding like a Constitution amendment on equality. Let us take a moment and reflect on what Dr. King meant about the content of one's character. The core ethical values of honesty, integrity, respecting others, taking responsibility for one's actions, being fair and just, and being someone who promotes love and compassion in others. The fight for civil rights continues today, as it has for hundreds of years for the people of color. Why is this such a preeminent challenge for the people of color, that we do not deserve full citizenship and equal, uncompromising voting rights? Why are we victimized and suppressed every time we speak out and up for ourselves? Why are we disenfranchised and criticize citizens of the country? Why have the wealthy and the Christians turned their backs on our rights in Congress? Fewer than half of the African Americans believe that the dream will ever be a reality for them. Deeply rooted in the American dream, there was no place for women and minorities and successful. They were seen as a threat to the privilege and supremacy in America. The land was free to some, and the pursuit of happiness was for the rich only. The content of one's character was never judged fairly by the country in the 1700s, 1800s, 1900s, or the 20th century, which we now live in. We are still lynched and bound by laws passed to suppress the right to vote and within the justice system. We have so far to go to climb the ladder of freedom from the restraints of unfairness. I ask you today, as Dr. King questioned the conscience of America 60 years ago, when will America let freedom ring? The freedom to work together without scorn or prejudice, to work together without backstabbing and lying on each other, to struggle together as poor and wealthy, and to learn how to share and give with a loving heart, to go to jail together, and to serve equal time and accommodations for the same crime committed as fair justice for all, to stand up for civil rights together, knowing that all men were created equal, and that all men should be free within the moral codes and responsibility of God and man's laws that are rightful and fair for all. The content of our character is of a proud, brave, hardworking, honest, trustworthy, intelligent, inventive and reliable men, women, and children whose ancestors gave their freedom and their lives to build a better America that didn't include them in the original Declaration of Independence, the United States Constitution, or the Bill of Rights. They fought for the respect and the right to be included in the amendments and acts that stated they were equal citizens under the law. So why do we continue to fight for our character? The content of our work for the lives given in wars and slavery was a supreme gift to the nation. What will it take for America to live up to its creed? As Dr. King stated, freedom and justice for all, then, just maybe, we will be free at last. Thank God Almighty, we're free at last. And I would like to thank you, sir, for listening today.
And you are listening to MPH Radio. When we come back, Ambassador Rice will tell us, show us, and give us how we can continue to get up and stand up for our rights. This is MPH Radio.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is on the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's a all that Peter told. After the story had never been told, so now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your rights. Come on,
get up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Most people think great God will come from the sky, take away everything and make everybody feel high. But if you know what life is worth, you would look for yours on earth. And now you
the ism, kism game. Diamonds go to heaven in a Jesus name, Lord. We know and we understand. Almighty God is a living man. You can fool some people sometimes, but you can't fool all the people all the time. So now we see the light. We gonna stand up for our rights. So you better get up.
That's right. Get up and stand up for your rights. That was our sister ambassador, Elizabeth Johnson Rice. That's what she did back in 1960, February 22nd, where her and a group of 34 students went into Tall Hamlet Department Store. And they stood up for their rights and what she's going to do right now. As we do our closing, she will give us a closing statement on one, why it's important for us to learn and remember the lessons of the Richmond 34. Ambassador, we want you to tell us how can we best help you in your journey as you continue to uplift our people, humanity. So right now, we're going to turn this mic over to you. So the mic is yours, Ambassador.
Thank you so much. And the thing I'm thinking about so much right now is the voting rights. What can we do right now? I think voting rights is one of the most important things that we can be getting behind, because if we don't have the voting rights, then the infrastructure and all those other things that we're trying to gain aren't going to mean that much. If the voting rights bridge is broken at the beginning, how can all of the infrastructures and all of those be maintained? Our democracy right now is on life support. Look at what has happened. Think about this. The democracy is on life support, and unless we do something serious today, not tomorrow, but today, in any way that we can, it will be on flatline. We will flatline our democracy. And then what will happen? Where will we be? I want to close with this information on attitude, our attitude. The longer I live, the more I realize the impact of attitude on life. Attitude to me is more important many times than the facts that I hear. It is more important than the past, than education, than money, than circumstances, than failures, than successes, than what other people think or say or do. It is more important than appearance, giftedness, or skill. It will make or break you. The remarkable thing is that we have a choice every day regarding the attitude we will embrace for the day. We cannot change our past. We cannot change the fact that people will act in a certain way. We cannot change the inevitable. The only thing we can do is play the hand we were dealt the best way we can, and that is our attitude. I am convinced that life is 10% what happens to you and me, and 90% how you and I react to it. And so it is with you. We are in charge of our attitude. But let me say this in closing. Please remember and take this with you, that God is supreme. The I am that I am presence is supreme, whatever you call it, Jesus, Buddha, whatever. This rules the world. It rules you. And if you do not have God in your heart, and you don't look up to something more supreme than yourself, then we are in trouble. Take God with you in everything that you do. Stand up for your rights. That's how you stand up for your rights. Not just you alone, but but take that silent partner with you. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to share my thoughts with you, and may God bless each and every one of you. Thank you so much.
Ambassador Elizabeth Johnson Rice, we are most grateful for having the opportunity to hear your story and to have your story as one of our missing pages of history. We extend not only our gratitude to you, but we want to let you know that from this point on, we will do all that we can to make sure that not only that our people will know the story, the Richmond 34 and your contribution, but the world will know this. So again, we thank you for being one of our features of Missing Pages of History. In closing, I'd like to go to my co-host and we'd like to let everyone know that all views and opinions that you hear on this particular program are not necessarily the views and opinions of MPH Radio. The independent views and thoughts, and we would like to invite you, if you have something to say, feel free to call in every other week, bi-weekly, which will be on the 14th of August at 1 p.m. You can call in and share your thoughts. If you'd like to be a guest on this program or have something to say, feel free to contact us at mphradio@yahoo.com. So in terms of our closing thoughts for today's program, 1 of 34, the Richmond 34, and Ambassador Rice, I'll go to my co-host today, Alex Joyner. I'd like to get your final thoughts, and then I will close it out. Alex, your final thoughts.
Yes. Again, I would like to say, Mr. Lee, enjoy your birthday and birth year, because no day after today is promised. But we have to have the attitude, as Ms. Rice said, an attitude that will carry us from day to day. An attitude that right now that we need, like she said, to carry us those few short steps to the ballot box in the midterm election that is about to come up. Because, yes, we need to vote for some changes. Get your information correctly, not misrepresented, not contorted, not twisted, not facts upside down, not conspiracy theories or whatever. But be diligent in your research for candidates, that you make the best choice for you, your family, your state, your nation, that this purpose of a vote is not wasted, not thrown away, but taken seriously, because that's how accomplishments are made. When people think that you deserve something you should already have. So I'm so appreciative of the program today. I've learned so much from Mrs. Wright. I thank you wholeheartedly for the effort, the time, the strength, the courage that you showed, not only in 1960, but I'm sure every day of your life as you went forward, being a black female in this country. So I thank you for all you've done and the many more things that you're going to accomplish, because no way is your life anywhere near old. Sounds to me is just dark. So I like to close with, I appreciate today's program from the bottom of my heart, because it did stir the passions that have always been dear to me, and that is making sure that my fellow man understands me and I understand him, that I respect his opinion and that he respects mine, that we can be different, we can be separate in ideas, but yet and still, when it comes to the basic necessities of education and government,
that we're on the same page as far as being successful. So I thank you ever so much, Lee, for today's program, and what a wonderful, wonderful show. And thank you again.
Thank you, Alex. Thank our special guest, Ambassador Rice. Thank all our listeners who call in and those who just listen and those who continue to share the work of MPH Radio. We'd like to remind you that MPH Radio comes on a bi-weekly basis. Program will be August the 14th at 1 p.m. The radio station is a project community program under the leadership of Missing Pages of History, Inc. For those who like to support our work, we encourage you to you can make your donation to MPH, Inc., Missing Pages of History, P.O. Box 27782, Richmond, Virginia, 23261. For those of you who have special skills for our writers, researchers, marketing skills, we are in the process of putting together a staff where we can better organize and, as they say, improve our game. Please give us a call by emailing us at mphradio@yahoo.com if you have interest. In closing, we just would like to remind you that remember, without information, you cannot think. And without organization, you cannot think clearly. We ask all of our, take some time out on a daily basis to learn something about your history and come and help us fill in our missing pages of history. We thank you for participating again on today's program. And we'll leave you with some music with a message. This has been MPH Radio.
is all right with me.
This has been MPH Radio.